All right, I will call the case. The fourth case for oral argument today is case number A18-1396, Seidel versus Seidel. The appellant has filed a brief. Respondent has, who is pro se, has not filed a brief, so oral argument today will consist solely of argument by appellant's counsel in favor of reversal, and then the matter will be submitted. Please identify yourself when you begin, and you will have 15 minutes for your argument.
Honorable judges, good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Brad Hattie, and I represent the appellant and original petitioner, Kimberly Seidel. This appeal and this oral argument is asking the court to overturn the lower court's judgment and decree awarding the father 50-50 legal custody with 100% physical custody to the mother, but unsupervised parenting time to the father. Based upon the evidence adduced at trial, the submissions by counsel, and the exhibits, the argument on behalf of Ms. Seidel is that the findings, conclusions, are an abuse of discretion by this trial court.
So Mr. Hattie, if I may, I just do want to understand exactly what you're asking for, because you talked about overturning the 50-50 legal custody, but what when I read your issues on appeal, I read them to say you think any of his parenting time should be supervised. I've got that right. I mean, that's different than saying overturn the whole thing, which I heard you just say now. So I did want to ask you about that. And I understand you're also looking at the legal fee award of legal fees.
Yes, Judge Jessen. I do wish to clarify. The critical part of the appeal, certainly, is to ask this court to overturn making parenting time supervised. It is the recommendation by all of the experts, with the exception of Mindy Mitnick, who says no parenting time. The reason why, since trial, and during trial, once Mr. Seidel was awarded unsupervised parenting time, he has, and I think arguably able to be proven, been uncooperative. So that's why we throw in that we would like to have legal custody reconsidered as well, because we believe he has shown that he will not be a cooperative parent in the best interests of Faith Ann, this young child. Most specifically, the court ordered the parties to return to neuropsychology evaluation as well as trauma evaluation, and Ms. Seidel is unable to get cooperation in choosing the proper evaluators. So this child is again without treatment. Ms. Seidel, as the court is aware, had this child in speech and occupational therapies and been opposed by Mr. Seidel. And then also, according to this order, the parties were required to execute an agreement and pay a retainer fee to a parenting time expediter. Ms. Seidel, the appellant, has executed the agreement.
You're going a little beyond the record here, aren't you?
I apologize, Your Honor. This is referencing directly the judgment and decree. And it is beyond the specific issues in the court, but one of the reasons supporting the question of why we asked for or asking for legal custody to be.
I don't think we can review something that's happened since then.
Oh, I agree with that.
Okay.
I certainly would not argue with that. Thank you. The statute, Ms. Seidel would argue, 518.17, is very clear. And I think black letter law that courts in considering and reviewing the issues of custody, whether legal or physical, must have the best interests of the child in consideration. And in fact, little consideration to specifically be given to either or both parents. Well, we believe, Ms. Seidel argues, that with 12 experts, with five witnesses, three of which were neutrals appointed by the court, all of them in agreement that this child suffered significant trauma and most likely sexual abuse and most likely at the hands of a male a caregiver. Now, it's hard to imagine when the court is hearing evidence from all of these people in the form of exhibits, meaning evaluations, oral testimony from the experts, and argument by counsel that, and as well as what I've put in my brief, that the court would determine that the experts are not credible, that the reports are stale, that there were reports that relied upon one or two specific evaluators, that they didn't conduct their own investigations. And with that in mind, nothing in evidence throughout this trial, with the exception of two police officers, ever refuted the allegation that this child has been traumatized.
So if I may, Mr. Hattie, because this is one of my central questions, and I just want to make sure during your time you are able to answer it for me. So what I saw kind of at a high level the district court doing was saying the district court was troubled by the addendum, the kind of final addendum to Dr. Albert, and which raised questions after looking at some mental health records, it appeared, correct me if I'm wrong, to raise more questions about your client's credibility. And so at a high level, what I saw the district court doing was saying, well, look, I've got a lot of reports from providers, a lot of which relied upon what your client said, and now I had this final report saying and raising real questions about whether she was telling the truth, which cast all those previous things in doubt. I mean, so that's what I saw the district court doing. Could you, if you think that is a fair assumption or not, tell me that first. But also, why would that be inappropriate, that he's looking at the earlier reports in light of this one kind of more final, most recent report?
I believe, and I want to make very clear to this court, that I have appeared before this judge many times. Well, that may be a misstatement, before, on a couple of occasions. And I find him to be quite good. So it's difficult to make frontal attacks about a judgment decree that, when you read it as an outsider, reads quite eloquently and thorough. I would, to answer your question, make, and I forgive for this position, that evaluators, when confronted with new material, will write, sort of to protect themselves, a retraction or an addendum. Now, I think it's important to note that what was not disclosed by Ms. Seidel, which created the lack of credibility, were issues about her personal mental health that occurred many years, about 15 years prior, and that until she was directed to provide signed authorizations, did not, and it was then presented to the court that she was deliberately interfering with the process. That's quite important. Secondly, what concerns me is that none of the evaluators, based on any of the evidence I've looked at, relied on Ms. Seidel for any reporting. They conducted their own investigations. Remember, this began when Ms. Seidel and her 11-month-old daughter were involved in a child mother parenting class. And the professionals there, the evaluators said, this child is suffering from a failure to thrive. She needs to be tested. Ms. Seidel had no idea of what may or may not be happening to her daughter. And so from that initial contact and from the realization that young Faith Ann was not thriving, she was then directed to go to Dr. Kathleen Chara, who conducted a number of interviews with the child, and that's a misstatement, I apologize, a number of play therapy sessions where the child directs their own activity with no direction from the psychologist. It allows them to make an independent, objective analysis. And then after a couple of different sessions, she was able to determine that from disassociation, from this sort of blank stare, that this child was exhibiting trauma. Again, nothing that my client, Ms. Seidel, ever inferred. In fact, when this was going on, it wasn't until Dr. Chara's report and Ms. Seidel witnessing Mr. Seidel online watching pornography did the issue start to become a concern to her. And that's how it progressed. So my argument would be, and I apologize for being so long-winded, that she didn't influence anyone. So her credibility, while could be attacked from her failure to disclose about 15 years ago, would have no influence on any of the reports. And I believe, again, without sounding like I'm criticizing too much, that it was, well, this is what I'm going to conclude, and these are the ways in my J&D findings that I can support my conclusions. And so I'm going to show that the mother was dishonest, disingenuous with Dr. Albert, and spent a great deal of time in the judgment and decree talking about it, yet dedicates very little time in Dr. Albert's report to the father.
If I could get you to clarify one other factual matter for me. The way I read this, but, you know, you're more familiar with what the record and what happened than I am, it seemed that the father went from supervised visitation that was relatively limited to unsupervised parenting time that was almost half of the time with the child. Is that correct?
That is correct. And which brings up, I think, a significant issue to consider. The court became frustrated and angry with Ms. Seidel because there was an emphasis, and I'm not sure why, but there was an emphasis to try to reunify the father with the child. The father had spent nearly 3 years on his own initiative not seeing this child long before any court action. So the court made the decision that based on the early allegations before there was any evidence adduced that will give mother a supervised visitation for the father. And then because of that frustration about getting the reunification therapy started, the court said, that's it. I'm going to allow basically 50-50 parenting time and unsupervised. My brief says that this, to me, shifts this case away from what's in the best interest of the child based on all of these experts and saying, look, I'm in charge. You didn't do what I said. And now I'm going to show you by not thinking of the child, but thinking about what I want, and that is I'm going to make you give up supervised parenting time so the father would have unfettered access. Now, as the court is aware, the court has many different alternatives in extracting compliance. Hold her in contempt. you know, and see if she eventually complies with the order. But to, against the, in the face of all of this evidence, say, well, it's okay now, even though I earlier temporarily granted supervised parenting, now I'm just not going to. You can go ahead and have unsupervised parenting time. And as the trial wore on, there were other issues that all the experts brought forward, but critically important to remember that there were three neutral court-appointed experts. You had, of course, the guardian ad litem. You had Donna Cairncross to conduct a custody and parenting time evaluation, and you had Mindy Mitnick to conduct a psychological forensic evaluation. The interesting thing about this is, as you look back, if you can pull yourself away, there are very few custody cases in this state, maybe anywhere, that has this number of experts, highly regarded experts, advocating for a child, including, if you want to talk about forensic experts in the area of computer, Mark Lanterman, who testified on behalf of Ms. Seidel and Faith Ann. So all of these people, and at the very end, even the court, and I'm already out of time, the court recognized that the custody evaluator saying, we need more tests, we don't have all the answers, but it has to be supervised. Mindy Mitnick was a bit more direct. We need more time to get more answers, but because of her background, any additional involvement with the father at this time could create even greater and possibly long-lasting permanent damage to the child. All of that information is in my brief. I rely on the brief along with the court exhibits and this oral argument. And I'm happy, if there are any other questions, Your Honors, to answer them.
It appears that there are none. Thank you, Mr. Hattie.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure. And please, everyone, be safe and stay warm.
Yes, the same to you. The case is deemed submitted, and the court will issue its written opinion within 90 days as required by statute.
Thank you very much.
All right.
The court is now in recess.